who are going to fight in order to bring peace, not to bring conflicts.
That's right.
So some fighting is not all about creating conflicts. People sometimes are dragged into fighting. I can call them not fight jihad because they want to bring peace. Unfortunately, this is not been interpreted correctly.
That's right. This interpretation of the verses of the Quran, and the thing is that they delete some part and they add some part to the verses of the Holy Quran. The context in which that verse was revealed is not known to them. And if you look at the history and how much the religion of Islam could help establishing peace among the families and the societies on the Arab Peninsula at the time of Prophet Muhammad, it would be really beautiful from the side of the scholars. But Sayyid Mohsen, still, as I said, there are some commentaries written on the verses of the Holy Quran and the incidents, especially after the demise of the Prophet Muhammad, about the wars that took place by the Muslim leaders and the kings here and there in different lands of the societies, show that maybe Islam was spread by sword and not words. What's your answer to that, brother?
Well, the problem started right after the demise of the Prophet.
Okay.
And for your previous and the recent question which you asked, for both of them, the answer is that the main root of this diversion and this extremism that which we see in today's world, it's because right after the demise of Prophet, there were some people who said, Hasbuna kitab Allah. The book of Allah is enough for us.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the book of Allah brings the overall or general rules, and the detailed rules and the details are in the life of the Prophet, in the narrations of the Prophet. So when they left the sunnah of the Prophet and the narrations of the Prophet, and they just attached, and they got the book only,
yes,
which they couldn't even understand, because the book of Allah, Quran, has in its verses, there are some hidden meanings.
Yes.
There are some clear wordings. There are some mutashabih, there are some similar,
yes,
things which are said. There are some clear,
the muhkamat, mutashabihat
have,
yes,
different meanings, obviously, as well. But obviously, there is nasikh and mansukh. There was a rule, and later by the Prophet,
yes,
it was overruled, and then the new rule,
right,
came. So when we look at the Quran, it has different aspects.
Mm-hmm.
In order to understand the Quran, we need to refer back to the history of the revelation.
That's right.
Why this verse was revealed,
okay,
upon the Prophet.
Yes.
Because of whom? What happened? Who did what? So that the Prophet has,
yes,
said this, or Allah has revealed the,
yes,
verses. So when they left all these things, these details, and they just got the book,
yes,
on its own without the teacher, without the explanation which was given by the Prophet,
yes,
we can see all those issues that happened into the Islam. And the picture today that,
yes,
we have, that Islam is spread by the sword,
yes,
this was never happened in the life of Prophet.
Yes.
Prophet never invaded any place.
Yes.
Rather, the battles which he had, it was in defense of Islam. He was defending the Muslims.
Yes.
And at that time, yes, it is true that it was out of the Medina. Why? Because at that time, whenever there used to be a battle, they used to go at a common place.
That's all right.
Which was in the middle of two countries or two places.
Okay.
So this was the reason, basically.
That's
so
right.
The main reason is when some people left the sayings of the Prophet, Ahlul Bayt, alayhim salam, which were obviously,
yes,
Allah has also emphasized,
okay,
on this, and the Prophet also said, I'm leaving amongst you two things, the Quran and Ahlul Bayt.
Mm-hmm.
So when they just got the Quran and they left Ahlul Bayt, they left the sayings of the Prophet narrations, the explanations,
okay,
about the verses, that's what happens generally.
Okay.
And this wrong picture that today we have is because of,
that's right,
leaving the explanations given,
yes,
by the Prophet.
And the Ahlul Bayt also,
Ahlul
as
Bayt,
the true exegesis of the Holy Quran. But in the 21st century, still after 14 centuries, after the relation of the Holy Quran to Prophet Muhammad and Islam, how do you think, Sayyid Murtaza, Islam and its teachings, its true teachings, I would like to very much use this term, pure Muhammadan Islam's teachings, can help international bodies like these different international bodies that are working for peace, Whenever you look at the main slogans and the mottos of these organizations, you can find peace. How Islam can help them in today's world?
Let's look at this question from another point of view.
Okay.
So all religions, including the religion of Islam, to some extent came, and it was descended to prophets to bring peace and bring nations together. So it is a duty we all have And this has been bestowed upon us, that we must work very hard to teach and influence on each and every community on the earth in order to live a peaceful life and to be a follower of this peaceful life. So the religion of Islam has put a great emphasis on this aspect.
Okay.
And if you can see, wherever we have gatherings, meetings, the first thing that is been mentioned by the speakers and those leaders, especially religious leaders, is the unity.
Yes.
So when we talk about unity and the united nation, so it means that Islam is putting its greatest slogan and mottos on unity. So unity is not happening without understanding, without mutual understanding, especially about religious matters.
That's right.
So the religion of Islam is focusing on similarities.
That's right.
The differences are not going to be given the first priority.
Okay.
So similarities bring people together.
Right.
So this aspect is the one that Islam has been propagated and has been talked about this matter over centuries.
That's all right. Especially as you said, reaching a kind of common ground among the Islamic leaders between themselves and also the leaders of the other religious communities and being united is a really important one. You know, the meetings that are happening today and the dialogue, both interfaith and intrafaith dialogues that are taking place and established in today's world show that all religious leaders are after making this peace in the world and not the conflict. But unfortunately, this media and the power of the media is showing it the way around.
And of course, you know that we need to work in order to build relationships.
Yes.
And relations of trust,
okay.
With other religions.
Yes.
And this is what Islam has been always doing. You know,
okay.
Over the past centuries, we had our infallible imams,
yes.
Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And on top of all, we have the Book of Islam, Quran, is telling us and its followers that a amicable relationship with other religions and with other followers of the other religions is really of a great importance.
That's all right.
So this shows that Islam has already said clearly that peace with and to other nations and anyone is very important.
That's all right. Said Mohsen, thank you very much, brothers, for your presence in the program. Viewpoints regarding how the religion of Islam can establish peace in today's world. It was very kind of you. And dear listeners, thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program Viewpoints. For more information, view our website at parstoday.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Also, our YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Thank you so much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. You can log on to our website at parstoday.com, and you can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until next time, goodbye. A symphony of nature. Oh, it's taking my breath away. I'm so blessed out here today.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear listeners. This is The Lantern, and thank you very much for joining us on this brand new episode of the show. coming to you not live from the studios of IRIB English Radio. I'm a firm believer that too much of anything can be destructive. Anything. Anything. I regret to say even chai. I can't live without chai. I'm not even ashamed of it. I admit, I confess, I cannot live without chai. But unfortunately, I mean, I don't know what science has been doing for the past few thousand years, but even too much of chai can, you know, have harmful effects. It's sad, but it's true. Too much of water, too much of a good food, too much of too much supplements even, too much vitamin D in our system, too much iron, too much calcium, all of that. A hadith tells us that there's only one thing that you can never have too much of. And we'll find out what it is right after this short little story, heartfelt story about a father and his wholesome prayer for his baby girl. And we'll be right back.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear friend, salam. So welcome to this episode of Lantern. Today we have a new story. Let's see what's our story for today. Wish you enough. That is the title of today's story. At an airport, I overheard a father and a daughter in their last moments together. They had announced her plan's departure and standing near the door. He said to his daughter, "I love you. I wish you enough." She said, "Daddy, our life together has been more than enough. Your love is all I ever needed. I wish you enough too, Daddy." They kissed goodbye and she left. He walked over toward the window where I was seated. Standing there, I could see he wanted and needed to cry. I tried not to intrude on his privacy, but he welcomed me in by asking, "Did you ever say goodbye to someone knowing it would be forever?" "Yes, I have," I replied. Saying that brought back memories I had of expressing my love and appreciation for all my dad had done for me, recognizing that his days were limited. I took the time to tell him face to face how much he meant to me. So I knew what this man was experiencing. "Forgive me for asking, but why is this forever goodbye?" I asked. "I'm old and she lived much too far away. I have challenges ahead and the reality is her next trip back will be for my funeral," he said. "When you were saying goodbye, I heard you say, 'I wish you enough.' May I ask what that means?" He began to smile. "That is a wish that has been handed down from other generations. My parents used to say it to everyone." He paused for a moment and looking up as if trying to remember it in detail, he smiled even more. "When we said, 'I wish you enough,' we were wanting the other person to have a life filled with enough good things to sustain them." He continued and then turning toward me, he shared the following as if he were reciting it from memory. "I wish you enough sun to keep your attitude bright. I wish you enough rain to appreciate the sun more. I wish you enough happiness to keep your spirit alive. I wish you enough pain so that the smallest joys in life appear much bigger. I wish you enough gain to satisfy your wanting. I wish you enough loss to appreciate all that you possess. I wish enough hellos to get you through the final goodbye." He then began to sob and walked away.
the lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
Right, so it's a very interesting story that, I mean the way this father, or the author of the story, I'm not sure if it's a real story, I highly doubt it, but the way the writer of this anecdote, his choice of words, or her choice of words, and the terminology that was used, and how it gives you some really deep perspective and insight on what to expect from life, really. Enough of. I wish you enough of anything, as in a sufficient amount of it. And that definitely differs from one person to another, doesn't it? From one, even for the same person, but in different situations and contexts and periods in their lives. Like a newborn stomach is the size of an almond and, you know, maybe 2-3 teaspoons of milk would be enough. But then the same child, 2 months later, they need more than that amount of milk. And fast forward, there are 32 and they're lactose intolerant entirely. yeah, it's a funny world. But the ahadith, that one thing that we were talking about, that ahadith tell us you can never have enough of, you can never overdo, there's no surplus in how much you can do it, how much you can engage in it, how much you can occupy yourself with it, is the remembrance of Allah. And once you really think about it, it's so interesting, because remembrance of Allah isn't just salat, or, you know, holding a subha, a rosary in your hands and doing dhikr, or, you know, reciting the Quran, or reading, or even contemplating, which is like the highest form of ibadah. Contemplation, which, you know, results in action and growth, of course. Not definitely contemplating about whether or not penguins have knees. Which, you know, if you really think about it, you do the research and then you realize that, okay, they don't have knees, but they function pretty well, though they walk funny, and subhanAllah, the power of God, and this and that. And then you go into a documentary loop on YouTube and it's all of a sudden 3 a.m. and you have to wake up for work. If you're feeling attacked, I'm sorry. Remembering Allah, the one thing that you can never have too much of, you can never do too much, isn't just dhikr or salat, right? It's a state of being where Allah has such a profound and significant position in your heart that it has been in satisfying Him has been ingrained into your subconscious. And everything you do is automatically for His sake. You know, He's your priority in life. He's your number one. And then once that happens, disclaimer, I am no scholar or mujtahida or marja'a. I'm just voicing my own personal experiences and spiritual journey, and I have such a long way to go. But the point is that once you have that, there can never be too much dhikr, remembrance, not dhikr with your lips, dhikr as in remembrance, the actual literal meaning of it, remembrance of God going on in your life, you can usually tell when you've had enough of something, because it kind of throws your compass that points toward God off, you know? And then you will be able to develop a sort of balance in everything that you do. You won't overdo it. You won't resort to ifrat or tafreet, the two extremes. And I think that is the whole objective of Islam at the end of the day, to create moderation in our lives. It doesn't tell us to, you know, forsake the material world entirely and go live in a cave and just pray and fast and contemplate all the time. Nor does it tell us to be so obsessed and engaged with the material world that we forget our final destination. And once we have that sort of view, that sort of mindset in our lives, we will be slowly able to develop the sense, the cognition, to recognize when something is off, something is extravagant, and it's not in alignment with that needle that is meant to point toward God anymore. Thank you for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. Ala bi dhikrillahi tatma'innul qulub.
In the limelight.
New research reveals lost rainforest resiliency imperils biodiversity, carbon storage, and the climate at a global scale. Stay with us for an article in this regard written by Brett Wilkins, journalist. This article is published under the heading Study Warns of Profound Consequences as Amazon Nears Tipping Point. Here's the story. The ability of the Amazon rainforest to recover from devastating droughts and wildfires has been declining over the past two decades, driving the crucial ecosystem to what authors of a study published recently called a critical transformation with profound consequences. The research published in the journal Nature Climate Change revealed that the world's largest rainforest has been losing resilience since the early 2000s, risking dieback, with profound implications for biodiversity, carbon storage, and climate change at a global scale as rainforests irreversibly transform to savanna. Satellite imagery analyzed by the study's researchers revealed that over three-quarters of the Amazon is losing resilience. Chris Bolton, a climate scientist at the University of Exeter and co-author of the report, told Inside Climate News that resilience is defined as the ability of the Amazon rainforest to restore itself back to a stable state. According to the site, the study adds to a mounting pile of research projecting that the Amazon will reach a point when it rapidly converts into a different, drier ecosystem, although the timing of this tipping point remains uncertain and whether it will encompass the entire rainforest is also debated. The authors of the new study have said the change could come within decades. They were reluctant to be more specific, but said the tipping point could be sooner even than current models suggest. The core idea is if the system is heading toward a tipping point where by definition it's getting less stable, this means that before that happens, it gets slower recovering from all these perturbations, like the drought events that are happening year to year, said Tim Lenton, another University of Exeter climate scientist and study co-author. If it gets to that tipping point and we commit to losing the Amazon rainforest, then we get significant feedback to global climate change, he continued. We'd lose about 90 billion tons of carbon dioxide, mostly from the trees and some from the soil, and that's several years of emissions. Linton added that such a development would have knock-on effects elsewhere in the world. The new study notes that deforestation and climate change via increasing dry season length and drought frequency may already have pushed the Amazon close to a critical threshold of rainforest dieback. Other factors, including rising atmospheric temperatures in response to anthropogenic greenhouse gas emissions, may additionally have negative effects on Amazon resilience, the publications added. According to The Guardian, areas closer to human destruction of the forest also became more unstable. Trees are crucial in producing rain, so failing them to clear land for beef and soy production creates a vicious circle of drier conditions and more tree loss. The good news, say researchers, is that the Amazon's tipping point has not yet been reached. Linton said, so there is hope, who added that the new study's findings should encourage efforts to reverse deforestation and degradation of the Amazon to give it back some resilience against ongoing climate change. Under right-wing Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro, the self-proclaimed Captain Chainsaw, deforestation in the country containing approximately 60% of the Amazon rainforest has reached its highest levels in more than a decade. The Brazilian Amazon ecosystem, as well as the nearly million indigenous people from over 300 tribes who live there, are under increasing threat from development including logging, mining, expansion of agricultural activity, and the construction of a major highway and dam. While the crisis is most pronounced in Brazil, it is also occurring in other Amazon nations and territories, including Peru, Colombia, Ecuador, Venezuela, Suriname, and French Guinea. Chris Jones, a climate researcher at the Met Office Hadley Center in Britain, who was not involved in the new study, told The Guardian that this research adds compelling evidence that climate change is a risk now and that these severe and irreversible impacts could become a reality. We have a narrow window of opportunity to take urgent action, he stressed.
This is Foresight. A program on how to worship Allah.
Allah, 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 Allah.
Today's great tip, our ubudiyah, our servitude to Allah, and overlooking the self in order to see the divine.
Allah, Allah, Allahu Rabbi, la sharika lahu.
So dear listeners, we're talking about ubudiyah, we're talking about the servitude to Allah, we're talking about the worship of Allah, and we're talking about the obedience to Allah, the Mighty, the Exalted, the Creator and the Sustainer. Now, one of the things that we are taught by the spiritual masters, the urafa, if you will, they teach us that we will have to overlook the self if we want to see the divine. Now, another one of the things which falls under this category of overlooking the self is that we have to remove ourselves from being among the veils of this world, the hijabat, the veils, the curtains, the barriers that this materialistic world creates. And so as long as we are enwrapped in the veils and the hijabat of this world, and we live within the covers of nature, within the limitations of physicalityness and materialistness, we cannot have the knowledge of the other world. And thus, we will not be able to keep warm by a remote fire. So, of course, here we have to understand that knowledge of the other world, knowledge of the actions that we do in this world, the knowledge of the relationship between this world and the next world, the knowledge of what our purpose in this life and our purpose of life really is, this knowledge is the source of life, and it is the source of eternity, and it is the source of our human perfection. But if we become enwrapped in the veils of materialism and consumerism and capitalism and even communism and these kind of different things, if we become enwrapped in the veils of the material world, wealth, money, power, glory, etc., then we will not be able to acquire that knowledge which is beneficial to us both in this world and the next.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com. Dear listeners of the program Foresight, my name is Muhammad. Today, I'm going to read to you an excerpt from Munajat al-Muftariqin, meaning the whispered prayer of the utterly poor. Stay tuned. نهاري دونكم ليل وليلي كله In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. My God, have mercy upon your lowly slave of silent tongue and few good works. Bestow your favors upon him through your plentiful graciousness. Shelter him under your plenteous shade. O generous, O beautiful, O most merciful of the merciful.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Foresight on IRIB English Radio. And so Imam Khomeini says, what regret, remorse, and loss can be greater than that after 40 or 50 years of working so hard in order to attain this true knowledge, which is the means of a human being's perfection and happiness, and this pure, true knowledge, which is the remedy for the pains of the cordial deficiencies of every single one of us. and is in fact, as Imam Khomeini says, the image of human perfection. After 40 or 50 years of trying to acquire this knowledge, we are not spiritually benefited by it, and rather this knowledge becomes a cause of tarnishing our heart because it is not able to free us from the dark veils of this materialistic world. So for example, in order to make it a little more specific and detailed, have we not heard that this world is temporary? Have we not heard that the next world, the hereafter, is the eternal home? So despite this knowledge, does it spiritually benefit us? Sometimes it does, but let's talk about when it doesn't spiritually benefit us. Why does it not spiritually benefit us? Because we are so wrapped up in the materialistic aspect of this world that the knowledge of the next world and such pure and true knowledge does not have an effect upon us. And so yes, if we are to see the divine and if we are to increase, enhance, strengthen, beautify our ubudiyya, our servitude to Allah, then we must overlook the self.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
أجب دعائي يا رجائي بالرضا والخير أنر طريقي مع صديقي باحترام الغير.
And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Hamza Yusuf.
Consciousness is the great bugbear of materialists, because there's no material proof for consciousness. They can't reduce consciousness. There's a lot of attempts, but don't believe them ever when they say, oh, consciousness is just chemical exchanges in the body or something. Trust me, they don't even know. I mean, there's such a strong argument for realist philosophy, right? Because there's so many things people will say to you. Everything you know is through sensory perception. This is kind of a post-enlightenment modern man. Everything you know, the mind is tabula rasa. There was nothing on it before you came into the world. Everything you've acquired is through sense perception. I mean, this is a modernist, materialistic argument. But these are fallacies. They're lies that have been perpetrated on modern people by sophists. And the sophists were the same type of people that the ancients were dealing with. For instance, there is nothing in the world, nothing that indicates categories, nothing. Categories are a complete creation of the mind. There's nothing in the world that says there's something, there's trees. There's nothing in the world that says there's trees. If you go out there and show me an oak tree, that's a name, but that thing, that is a unique thing. There's nothing, there's no other oak on the whole planet. And if you went and examined every single oak on the planet, you will find that they're different from that oak. Just like every human being is different from every other human being. There, look at all the people in this room. Nobody's the same. We resemble each other. There's certain semblance, so that's true. But to categorize us, the mind did that. The mind did that. Numbers don't exist in the world. This is two. Where did two come from? Well, there's two. There's one, two. And then plus one is three. One, two, three. The mind did that. That's not in the world. The mind put them together. So mathematics is something that, where did that come from? Where did that ability to do that come from? And this is why Einstein said, the only thing to him that was incomprehensible about the world was its comprehensibility. Why are we able to discern all this meaning? How did Newton figure out the universal law of gravity? How did he do that? Where was that? To take an apple falling and to universalize that. So all of these, you know, this modern madness of denying at least the possibility of the mind being outside of this world. You know, that the mind, that consciousness itself is not a material thing. It's an immaterial thing. Just even that possibility, that is a rational proposition. It's not irrational. So this argument that somehow it's irrational, they're lying. That's all they're doing. They're lying. It's just they have chosen to side on materialism, not on spiritualism, or that there is something outside of the material. That's their choice, and that's fine. You made that choice, and you have to live with that choice. And if you die and there is an afterlife, you're going to have to deal with that choice also. But those people that choose the other view have, from our perspective, more rational proofs, because this idea that this, you know, just popped into existence, just popped in, you know, like my hand wasn't designed, and then you're going to tell me, well, it was a selfish gene. Selfish gene? Selfish gene? Like, where did it get its selfishness from? So the gene has a personality, and it happens to be a selfish personality as opposed to an altruistic gene? Really? I mean, think about just how they talk about, and then natural selection did this. I've read their books, and then natural selection seems to just do a lot of things that it wants to do. Where did it get that will to do things? Where did it get the will? Where did the irada come from? Seriously. Don't be fooled by sophistry and by language and by... Think about these things at a deeper level. And some of you that are in universities, you know, these people have been, they've been brainwashed, you know. They've been trained in certain ways of thinking, and it becomes really difficult for them to see. But if you've had, you know, great teachers, or if you've read the great teachers of the past, these people weren't stupid people. You know, Newton believed in an afterlife. He wasn't a stupid person. You know, Isaac Newton wrote a commentary on the Bible. And half of their science is based on his insights. Really, without Newton, you know, this modern world doesn't even exist. Leibniz believed in God. That's where they got their calculus from to deny God.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين Dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You are listening to the IRIB English Radio. Welcome to your own program, The Islamic Upbringing, where we are discussing very important issues, problems, questions, and so many ahadith and riwayat of Aima Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam and the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam regarding our youth, regarding the Islamic upbringing. Today we are having Sister Razia Batul Najafi. She is a religious scholar and we will discuss inshallah about so many important issues and we will benefit from her talks. Salamun alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And I'm going to benefit from your amazing wisdom and research. Inshallah, we are going to discuss together.
We all will benefit from the ahadith and riwayat of Ahlul Bayt alayhim assalam and the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Today, again, we are going to discuss a very, very important issue. That is how parents should deal with their teenagers. For example, regarding upbringing their teenagers, how should be their behavior? Like they should become very firm, very strict, or very lenient and very open-minded, because these things are very important for upbringing a very fruitful teenage, yeah? And for teenagers also, this is very important. When they see the reaction of their parents, according to that they react usually. So, inshallah, we will benefit from your beautiful discussion.
No, we will discuss together, definitely. I love this triangle, you know, triangle of respect and firmness and friendly. So, wow. If you are friendly, firm, and respectful towards your teenagers, then you will get the fruits.
These are the three very important pillars.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And mostly, we as a parent, we are lacking in our authority, in our firmness. Because that is our weak point, you know, because children and our teenagers are our part of our life. So sometimes whatever principles and rules we have made it, but if a child is insisting, yeah, so especially from mother's side, you know, and she's just spoiling the child and saying, let her do this time, not at all. That is, if in a wrong time, if we are lenient, then that can just damage the rules and principles of a family.
This shows that we have to be very disciplined to bring our teenagers especially. And if we are disciplined within our family, within our house, so this teenager will understand, will adopt the beautiful qualities of being disciplined. And in future, he can become a very fruitful part of his own society.
Absolutely. So first of all, we have to have some
discipline rules.
Rules, you know, laws. And we could say these are the limits. We are not allowed to cross the limits. And we have to practice that. Everyone knows that action, speaks louder than words. Yeah,
definitely.
That everyone knows. So our action is there. First of all, then our rulings, we are keep telling our children, our teenagers that these are the red zone. You cannot go. You cannot cross the limits. And we have to be extremely firm about that area, which is, we have discussed before with them that this we cannot compromise at all. Yeah. So look at the saying of Mawla Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. I love it. I love it. I love it. Truly, absolutely. It says, كن لينا من غير ضعف وشديدا من غير عنف. Like you have to be layin, very soft, very lenient, but not because you are not able to be firm or to be harsh. No, you know, you are not weak. You are not Lilian because of your weakness. No.
You have authority, power. You can punish your, you know, teenager, but...
Still,
yeah,
exactly. That is so beautiful. And shadidan min ghayri unf. Like, you are showing your harshness, definitely, like strictness, yeah, but without...
Sorry for disturbing. We will take a short break. Inshallah, we will continue after the
Inshallah.
Break.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Dear listeners, welcome back. So we were discussing about the very, very important, again, you know, issue regarding our teenagers. And you were shedding light.
Yeah, everyone, all of us, we have to sit with the gate of knowledge, Babul Ilm. You know, this is the beautiful banquet which Imam is just spreading for us. And this is the inheritance, you know, which we, as a lover of Imam,
how
we are taking.
How fortunate we are. Because we have all these golden hadith and riwayat and guidelines of our Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, kun layyinan min ghayri dha'f. So if you are lenient, if you are very polite with your teenagers, that because that is your style, that leniency should be because of wisdom, because of some maslaha.
Means in sometimes we have to be very firm. We should not allow our teenagers to cross the limits. But in some areas, we should be lenient.
Yeah. So if we are polite, that politeness should be because of some reason, not because we are weak, because I don't have any other way to go. And shadidan min ghayri unf means you are very strict, but you are not harsh, you are not bitter. You know, if even strictness is with so much respect you know, with honor. For example, if your child is not respecting some rulings which you have discussed with your child, your teenager. So
again, sorry, I'm disturbing your discussions. It depends what kind of rulings he wants to cross the limits. For example, if it is about the ibadat or about the sharia, then we are not allowed to be lenient.
Exactly.
For example, when it comes to halal and haram and these very important rulings of the sharia, then we should not be lenient.
No compromise at
all. But when it comes to the usual things, normal things and disciplinary things in our house, like not watching TV or not drinking any soft drinks or cold drinks, in these issues, maybe you can become lenient.
It depends on...
At the same time, you are very firm, you are not weak, you have authority, but you become sometimes lenient. And your teenager understands that you have this authority. You can punish him or her, but still you are ignoring and you are becoming lenient. So it has very good impact in his, I think.
Exactly, because those are not that kind of red zone, yeah, like, you know, forbidden zone, yeah? So you can be Lilian in that area.
So, dear listeners, we will take again a short break. Inshallah, we will come back quickly.
Ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal khayrat.
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, be like a friendly physician who applies medicine where it is useful.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We were discussing about the being Lilian and ignoring sometimes and being firm at the same time, yeah. And you have shared a very beautiful hadith of Mawla Ali alayhi salam with us, where he says that, you know, sometimes we have to be very, very firm and sometimes we have to be lenient, but at the same time we have the power and authority.
Absolutely, yeah. Exactly. So I'm just giving you an example that, you know, some of the parents, unfortunately, they are not firm. They're not using their authority. Yeah. The child, you know, the teenagers are very smart. They understand.
Very intelligent.
Our parents are so weak. We can play with their weak points. And they are playing. They are playing. And we are just, you know, running around them. And we are not a successful parents. You know, we are failure because of our own not using our authority which Allah has given to us. So if a child knows that my parents are very firm about their rulings and they have given by their action this guarantee that if they say something, yeah, very firmly, they will do it. You know, they really respect the about the limits. So for example, if a child, for example, this is the ruling that we have to pray, for example, our prayers, yeah, we have to offer our prayers, like Salatul Subh, for example, morning prayers, for example, yeah, for teenagers,
which is
because
very, very
16 years old is wajib, yeah.
For most
so
of
if
our
someone,
teenagers.
Yeah, if he's not praying, ignoring, you know, intentionally, so if you have, for example, told him or her that if you don't pray, I will not give you your mobile, for example, I'm just giving an example. So if he comes and says that, no, please, mama, give me, you know, I'm bringing nanima or grandma, grandpa. You know, sometimes they bring all this shafa'at and, you know, that the beautiful medium. So you shouldn't be. You can have smile on your face. You're not allowed to insult him or her. You know, this is
yeah,
the meaning
definitely.
Of hadith. Yeah, you shouldn't insult. You shouldn't open again the chapter of history, you know, nothing. You're just smiling and you're just saying, oh, my son, oh, my daughter, do you remember? This is our ruling. Yeah, yeah. I can't cross the limit because I'm not crossing myself. So I don't allow you. You are deprived this time. Inshallah, next time you be careful and then you will get your, you know, right. So once, it's a very, very tough for parents, I know, because we have that love for them. You know, we always want to just devote ourselves for them. You know, we want to sacrifice everything. But still we have to be firm. If once we are firm, then that will remain in their mind. They'll say, oh, yeah. You know how the police are. You know, they take all the, you know, what we say.
They fine
us. Yeah, fine. Yeah.
They and do not accept any excuses.
Yeah, I have given many times, many, you know, dollars, $100 for some fines. So always I remember, I say, yeah. Next time I should repeat, yeah. So that is nice because Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala also has taken this style of training in Quran because he says, if you do that, you'll get the punishment, you know.
So this is a very good example.
Exactly.
You know, at the same time, they are very polite. These police usually, you know, they do not insult, they do not disrespect you, but they are firm at the same time
exactly.
And they fine you.
Yeah.
Dear listeners, thank you so much for being with us. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. If you have any question, any comment, please share with us at englishradio@irib.ir. That's again englishradio@irib.ir. And you can follow us on social media at Call of Islam Radio, Call of Islam Radio. And you can visit us on www.parstoday.com. Thank you for joining us. Until next episode.